was nothing left to say.
All right, this is Interview Radio on 95.7 WLXL. My name is Lexington Sowers. I'm here with Ben Wolf and Kyle Bigelow. How are you doing, Ben?
Hey, morning.
Good.
It's cold.
It is cold. Kyle, how are you?
I'm doing well, except for, obviously, the weather and the cats, who are both sort of tanking at the same time. I've got on my phone, it says 17 degrees, but the real feel, it says Antarctica? I don't know. I've never seen that before. It's terribly cold, and seems like we're going to get some precipitation in the next 48 hours or so, too.
I always stick to my original statement, which was, as long as there's no ice, we can deal with that. If I've got to spend a half an hour cleaning ice off my car, I can't. I'm just exhausted and can't get anything done.
Well, you're already a step ahead of where I'm at on that. As long as there's no ice immediately in my bed, then I think I'll be okay and try to make it through.
Well, Ben, you and I have talked on previous shows with some people in town who are in charge of disaster preparedness and being aware of the weather, and they've had some really interesting things to say. I think you pointed out earlier about the blankets.
Yeah. We've had several people on say, as part of like a winter preparedness kit for your car. Oh, and also your pets. Mm-hmm. You have to keep in mind your pets when you're traveling in the car and keep a real blanket on you and not one of those cheapo little, this is a mirrored blanket and it'll keep you. No, you want a real blanket.
Right.
And stuff like that. And what did they say? Gas cans.
Around like that.
And we also went into home safety and fire safety. Generators, keep an eye on your generators. Space heaters, probably not a good idea to have those sitting up against the wall running 24/7.
Right.
And what else did they say?
And make sure your stove.
No, don't heat your apartment with your stove.
Yes, because that could.
Should go without saying at this point. But, sometimes the heat goes out. Last year when we hit that negative 11, the heat went out in my apartment, and I was stuck there waiting for the guy all day, and it was really tempting to turn on the oven and just have the oven heat the home. Instead, I took like several showers because I think the water was still warm.
So you're saying don't try to warm your home with tiki torches around the living room or something, open flames? You can leave the whale blubber lanterns down in the basement.
Absolutely. And our battalion chief, he said, clean the flue.
Yes.
Clean the chimney so you don't get suffocated in and all that.
Right,
and
those make sure that your chimneys are clean and your fireplaces are ready to go.
And those self-cleaning logs probably won't do it by themselves.
Right.
Bring somebody in, bite the bullet. You can heat your home with a nice fireplace.
Right.
As long as it works.
Yes.
Well, and weatherproofing too, I mean, all of this stuff, and if you're trying to take care of these things at the last minute, it's probably a little bit too late. In fact, they should talk about these things when it's like 95 degrees outside when you actually have the motivation to go out to Lowe's and get some weatherproofing strips.
And while they still got stuff in stock, like the de-icer. Try finding de-icer for your car when it's 5 degrees out. I go from gas station to gas station or department store to department store. You can't find anything.
Yeah, they're probably selling it for $75 a gallon at this point.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've got the big industrial size ones. Those are in stock. But the little ones, the $2 ones, no, that's impossible to find. Oh, have a spare ice scraper, which I found out the hard way last winter. When mine broke, as I was cleaning it off, so I'm the handle broke, so I'm holding in my hand the scraper on the end, like an inch away from the windshield, trying to get to work on time.
Yeah, have you ever pulled the move where you use the CD case to try to get all the ice?
No, I haven't thought
of that. That's the move that I use. Yeah, and the second icebreaker, that's a good idea. The first one is the one that I really need to invest in, because right now it's a 311 self-titled album is tearing apart to shreds as the dew point rises.
Fun thing is, if you keep two ice scrapers in your car, one out of sight, you're driving somebody somewhere and they say, I'd help you scrape off your car if you had a second ice scraper, and you go, hold on just a second. I'll need to go grab the second one.
Yeah. Take that,
you,
dude.
Your little empty promise is coming back to haunt you. And then I don't make them do that, really. I just enjoy the joke and the panic that in their eyes, like, oh, no, what did I promise?
Get out of here, you.
I thought I was being chauffeured. Yeah.
I'm looking at a list from Be Ready Lexington of the 10 things not to leave in your car. So it's things like phones, laptops, musical instruments, anything.
Children, like, presumably.
That too. But pets is on the list. Or canned sodas.
And speaking of pets, I think we're one of the few states that doesn't have that legislation about keeping your pets in the car when it's both hot and cold out. But especially the summer, but also in the winter, you walk by a car and you see a poor little animal losing its mind in there, and the windows are all rolled up or whatever, it's freezing, and that's really, really annoying to me. So if I see that, if you do that and I see it, I'm gonna walk into the store and I'm gonna have you paged and say, go take care of your pet.
Well, it is just as dangerous for animals in the winter as it is in the summer. So just keep in mind that even if they're outside animals, maybe bring them in, be a little bit more careful about what you're doing outside with your pets, because they don't have a blanket or a nice warm bed like you do.
And I know with the wiener dogs, you got to get the sweater for them.
Oh, of course.
It's uncouth. it looks tacky, but they do need they actually need the doggy sweaters and stuff like that.
Are there any tips for like fashion advice for your pet?
I imagine you could season? Do you could spruce up the sweater at all. You could do like the antlers.
I think glitter is always acceptable.
And the antlers always work on the dog if you want to put that on. I think that's very Christmassy.
We're off to a running
start. Oh, yeah, yeah. Who do we have on the show today?
All right, well, today we have Nyetta Wiggington. She spoke yesterday at a Martin Luther King Jr. celebration, so she's going to talk with us a little bit about some history, some of MLK's goals and what he achieved, and also what we can achieve and what we can work towards as Lexingtonians and Kentuckians. And then we have Miss Clark Davis, who's Miss UK.
That's right. In the noon hour, we're going to have Clark Davis on. She's Miss Kentucky. She recently performed in the Miss America pageant. We're going to talk to her about that. And performing at the Unity Breakfast yesterday for, I believe that was... I don't know if that preceded or came after the march itself, but we also want to ask her what Danny Glover's like from talking to her earlier. It sounded like she snuck in some Snapchats here and there, so looking forward to that. Tune in.
I was very happy to see the picture on the front page of the paper today with all the people who showed up, braved the cold, braved the weather, and... every year, Martin Luther King Day, I believe, is the coldest day of the year, or very close to it, and it's always great to see like all those people coming out, and it makes Lexington more active and vibrant and diverse, and I think that's fantastic. So I'll be looking forward to talking to our guest today. That'll be fun.
Well, yesterday I wasn't at the march, but I'm looking at the. Article coverage that was done by the student newspaper at the University of Kentucky. And they covered the Glover speech as well as the UK president, Capilouto's. And I think Glover had some really interesting things to say. And he talked a lot about things that he's involved in and things that the community can do to get to be more inclusive and to be more welcoming. So that was very interesting. Were you there, Kyle?
I was not there. I did. I read a report, unconfirmed though, that after the speech, Danny Glover had to give up his badge and gun to Mayor Gray because he's a loose cannon and cannot be controlled. Him and Mel Gibson.
Did it spread to Danny Glover?
That is the only Danny Glover joke that I have.
Does we have to register him just as a Lethal Weapon?
I believe so, yeah. He's one of those guys where it's just his bare hands can't be stopped.
No. You learn a lot from being in those movies. Or my understanding is also that he's getting too old. For some things.
I don't recall exactly what for things stuff. He was getting to.
What did they say? What did they say on basic cable? I'm too old for this situation. They take another word out of a different form of dialogue. So I'm getting too old for this fruit or this vegetable.
I know that there are two kinds of Lexingtons that love some hot Lethal Weapon talk, and that is our audience, and also my co-host to my left, who has buried her face into her hands.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you're probably too young for Lethal Weapon.
I am.
We were talking earlier. You're too young for Beverly Hills Cop. I had to tell you who Glenn Frey was.
Yes.
Earlier today, and she still doesn't know who Glenn Frey was.
That was were we talking? Which Beverly Hills Cop?
Oh, the first one.
This is Eddie Murphy in his heyday.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop required
viewing of all prepubescent and adolescent kids who were my age in the mid 80s.
I will take that as gospel from the senior member of the show here. Yes, everyone go out and appreciate yourself some Eddie Murphy.
Well, and Glenn Frey, because Glenn Frey passed away. What was it, late last night? And he was in the Eagles. The Eagles were this really big band. They sang a song called Hotel California.
I think I know that
you
one.
May have heard occasionally. And oh, Take It Easy, and oh, Witchy Woman.
No, classic.
Complete blank. Here. Yeah, she. I really feel old when somebody says, "Oh, I've seen parts of Back to the Future." I think, if that's the movie I'm thinking of, or parts of Ghostbusters or stuff like that.
Okay. You're listening to 95.7 WLXL LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. We're going to go take a break right now and hopefully come back with Nyetta Wigington of the Urban League.
All right, guys, we're back, and we are speaking with Miss Nyetta Wigington. She is the founder of Whistlework. That's a Lexington nonprofit. Hi, Miss Nyetta, are you here?
I am here.
Hi.
Thank you for having me here today.
No problem. And it's okay that we speak on air, live?
It is.
Okay, good. All right, so tell us a little bit about what you did yesterday.
Yesterday I had the privilege of speaking with the Georgetown MLK celebration. So it was an honor to be there with the NAACP and to be there with leaders and members of the community as we celebrate the legacy that is Dr. King.
Awesome. Well, from what I've heard, it was an amazing speech that you gave. And you spoke a little bit about being a torchbearer. Can you explain what that is and what prompted you to start that?
We are all torchbearers, and we have the responsibility as torchbearers to train the next generation. We want them to be a light of inspiration. We want to ignite them with hope. And it's important that we give them the information that they need to live out their dreams, to live out their purpose in this life. And if we're not cognizant of their hopes and their desires and their dreams, then they still will ignite, but it may not be positively. So we want to take our minutes, our time, our effort into molding them, shaping them, applauding them, and encouraging them.
Awesome. What are some ways that we can do that? And what are some interesting ways that you've seen people do that? Whether through conscious kind of major big works, nonprofits and stuff like that. But then what are some daily things that we can bring into our day to make sure that we're helping people be torchbearers in a positive light and ignite people positively?
Some of the things that we can do involves the training that Dr. King's parents did with him. It was a daily activity for his family to discuss the news and discuss issues at the table and to share their ideas. And the young people were just as active in the conversation, Dr. King and his sister and his brother, in the conversation as his parents. We need to take time with our young people and realize that they have ideas as well. And we want to help shape them as critical thinkers. So allow them to discuss ideas, allow them to discuss their hopes, allow them to talk about what's going on and how they would like to make contributions or changes. Dr. King was blessed to be in the Beloved community, and the Beloved community nurtured him in many ways. He was mentored by Dr. Benjamin Mays, who was a renowned educator who came out of Morehouse College. Dr. Benjamin Mays is well known for a poem that he wrote about the importance of us using our minutes, to use our seconds, to use all of our time, and to be accountable for that time. And individuals in Dr. King's generation were accountable for the time they poured into young people, and we have that same accountability.
Naida, Kyle Bigelow here. I wanted to ask you about some of these issues that you think, the civil rights issues, if you will, that are most important in Lexington right now.
Right on, in Lexington, there are a continuum of civil rights issues, and not the least of which is education. We know that we want to empower our young people with knowledge and information, so it's important for parents and adults. And I emphasize adults because whether or not you are a parent or you're a godparent, you're an aunt, uncle, cousin, the young people belong to all of us. So take advantage of the opportunity to volunteer in the schools. Take advantage of the opportunity to be a part of parent leadership academies. I have the wonderful privilege of being a part of one with the Urban League, and there are others in the city. There's the Pitcher Committee. There is the PTA. Get involved in those activities because those are the organizations that help equip our children. They help identify the next steps. Be involved in the SBDMs that pick out the curriculum. Take advantage of working with youth-based organizations like PAL, youth-based organizations like YMCA Black Achievers. Take every opportunity of spending your minute and your time with the next generation. We're dependent on them. And as we look at violence that is erupting around our country, we want to be sure that we have empowered a new generation with the ability to think critically and to understand better the role of civil obedience and civil disobedience.
What are some of the experiences that you've had that got you to become involved with the Parent Leadership Academy? What were you seeing that was a call to action for you?
I'm very thankful that Mr. P.G. Peoples invited me for that opportunity, and you will know that Mr. Peoples began his career in the civil rights movement many, many years ago, many decades ago. He is a young man, as a young man, had the opportunity to play with Caucasians in his neighborhood of Harlan County, and I will say the friendships that youth make perpetuates how they behave in the larger context. We know that Dr. King had a young friend whose parents were Caucasian. The young man was Caucasian. They ran a grocery store in his neighborhood, and they were no longer allowed to play. That put a seed in Dr. King's mind as to what is the reason that we're being separated now. Dr. Dorothy I. Height, who was Dr. King's colleague during the movement, had a similar experience. So it's important for us to allow our children to participate. And I was blessed to have parents who involved me in their activities. My father was involved in public service, and it was nothing for my brother and I to go out and help pass out flyers, to go involve people and encourage them to come out to community meetings. And my parents were young parents. My mother was in school at UK, and we were often taken to their meetings. And so I say the Bible instructs us to put children in our midst, and I had the opportunity to be that child who was placed in the midst. And as a result, I understand and recognize the importance of being involved in parenting type of activities. And the Parent Leadership Academy equips parents to better understand the dialogue and the conversation that teachers have. I have a background in education. And so taking that verbiage, that vocabulary that teachers use, and making sure that it's adaptable for the layperson, making a translation is very important so that our teachers and our parents and our students, and our students should be involved in that conversation as well, can help direct their next steps.
Yes, I'm a student at UK, and I'm taking a media and diversity class, but that's one thing we talked about on the first day is that things are so different than what they were 20, 30 years ago as far as our children go, because, and my professor used her own child as an example, that now there's little girls with Doc McStuffins, who's a Disney character, an African-American Disney character, that it doesn't matter what color those kids are. They're all carrying around that backpack. So I do think there's been some progress, some little itty-bitty bit, but we do have a lot more work to go and to improve on. What is some of that open language and maybe just direct things that we say that kind of hurt or help us, and how can we fix that?
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on, individuals who are listening to the radio show now and each of us individually. If we could just take some quiet moments with ourselves and ask, what can we do? You mentioned the media, and that is huge, because although there have been advancements in the media, and you mentioned the character, and I will say I ran out and got Operation The Game because it had that little character on the cover, and I had never seen that before, so I was excited. But what we want to make sure is that we can change the characters, but we want to be sure that we also change the portrayal. As much as we're getting new African-American, new Latino characters in the early childhood phase, we want to be sure that we're cognizant of what type of music we're listening to. What is the verbiage we're saying about children? How are we directing them to look at African-American men and African-American women and African-American seniors and Latino families and Asian families in the media? Because sometimes we can be guilty of creating characters for children, but not continuing that message that there are individuals who are adults, who are dynamic, and who are awesome. They're void. If we look at the upcoming celebration of films that came out, we know that there's not an African-American movie, an African-American actor who's being honored or who's being celebrated. Those type of voids are noticed, and we also have to notice that when they do get celebrated, they're celebrated at a time when they do a character who is not necessarily positive. So we want to be sure that we're not sending mixed messages.
How do you feel this message is being received by the upcoming generation of elementary, middle, and high school kids? Do they get it?
I don't think so. And I say I don't think so because we are not taking as much time as we can to help them to navigate it. When I was living in Atlanta, there was a big move across the country for character education. And what I found that was interesting is that individuals were teaching Martin Luther King, for example, but they were teaching facts. They weren't teaching the character and the humanity behind it, things like courage, things like confidence, things like risk, things like nobility. And when we separate the character from the content, we have a problem. It's important for us to teach our young people the character that comes behind it. We know right now that our children are besieged with bullying messages from one another, the way they're utilizing the media, the way they're utilizing their conversation. If we are aware of that, and that's happening across the board around all cultural and socioeconomic dynamics, we also know there's a rise in suicide for children as well. If those things are happening, we have to be cognizant that there's something that we need to do differently. There's some conversations we need to have. We need to remind our young people the value of life. We need to remind them that arguments happen and disagreements happen, but there's always tomorrow, that we don't become so concerned about the respect. And I know young people are so concerned now about, you know, give me my respect, that we give them their respect, but know that tomorrow comes. Things can heal, that there has to be an idea of reconciliation. We are living in a culture right now that does not respect the chair. And when I say respect the chair, I mean respect the police, respect the mayor, respect the president, respect. You can disagree, but there is a way to disagree. And when we have individuals who are elected and who can say mean things to one another, we have to realize that we are creating that culture for our children as well. I think we have to be very proud of the way our city has handled issues that are happening here, and we just have to be sure that we continue that. Recently, ladies of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated had a Black Lives Matter activity, and part of that activity was to work with the young people to understand that the members of the police force, by large, are wonderful people. By large, are people who are concerned about you, and to know how to work within the law if you want to have laws changed.
You mentioned having people in politics and in the service, you know, in service positions that recognize the inequalities and are making changes and are striving to create change. And that's something that I know my social circle and I have talked a lot about, is that you watch the State of the Union and there's not a lot of diversity. What?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what are some things that people, especially children, who think, oh, I would love to be a police officer, I would love to be a politician, but maybe they think they can't because of their race, because of where they come from. What? First of all, what advice and what do you have to say to them? And then how can we help them realize and complete those dreams?
I think Kentucky has to celebrate that we were the first state in the South to pass the Civil Rights Act. And that celebration is taking place at your university. University of Kentucky Law School has a symposium with the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights on January the 27th. I would invite your peers to attend that celebration. It will tell you much about what happened in terms of getting public accommodations in the state, and that was something that was heralded across the country. In that celebration, we can also honor Senator Georgia Davis Powers. She was the first African-American senator in Kentucky and the first woman senator in Kentucky. We need to put people like her and like others who have been in the legislature in front of our children. We currently have in our Senate Senator Reggie Thomas, who is the first African-American senator from Lexington. We also have our House Representative George Brown, who came from Lexington City Council. Previously, that seat was held by Mr. Crenshaw. We want to be sure that we invite individuals like that to come and speak to our schools. We want to be sure that we invite individuals who are part of our police force, a part of our fire department, people who are in places of service. So often in our community right now, we look at the word politician as if it's a dirty word, and it really is an empowering word. If we have people who are elected public servants, they represent our voice, and we need to take every opportunity to invite them into our community. And I will say that as a founder of WhistleWork, each of those people have been very receptive to come out and talk. I know that Senator Thomas often welcomes young people to come down to the assembly. Take advantage of that offer. When you say people are concerned about where they come from, I come from the West End Corridor, a corridor that is often looked at negatively in terms of the stories that are portrayed about Georgetown Street. But Georgetown community has produced our first full-fledged African-American fire chief, Keith Jackson, who recently retired, our former first assistant police chief, Mr. Barry, the late Mr. Barry, reared his family in the Georgetown Street corridor. Those type of stories need to be brought back to our young people to say they can do it. I know that the police officer, Michelle Patton, she recently did this workshop, and she's more than willing to come out and talk to our young people. The Kentucky Commission on Human Rights, I would ask everyone to look at their website. You can contact Mary Ann Taylor. She will send you a placard of individuals who are in the Kentucky Commission of Human Rights, and that's wonderful educational information for young people to have, to put on their walls, to put in their bedroom. When they're Googling, give them some names to Google. The University of Kentucky has an oral history project. It was led by Lisa Higgins-Hord, who's your Vice President of Community Engagement, and she is such a dynamic contributor to the community, and she is very sensitive to the needs of our children. She funded an oral history project that has been done there, and people can get on that site and hear from some of our leaders. There are mass resources out there. My email address is the number 4, the word whistle, WHISTLE, work, WORK, @gmail.com. I would more than gladly send people additional information about civil rights leaders in our area or ways they can get information if they are interested. I hope that helped answer your question.
Mm-hmm. It did. It did. So a lot of times people say, oh, I'm too busy. I don't have the time to, you know, even if it is something, and in reality it'll only take 30 seconds or 30 minutes to send that email to sign up or you know, to listen to that podcast, which, on a side note, the Wisdom Project is doing something, is doing a piece on African-American baseball players and managers, and it, I think it'll be awesome. Amazing when it gets done.
Awesome.
But how do you...
There are many who are from this area. I hope that you will reach out to Mr. Lou Johnson, who's with the Dodgers, who was reared on Georgetown Street in Lexington.
But how do we find the time, and why is it so important that we find the time?
It is said now that the average person spends at least an hour on the internet surfing YouTube or surfing Google, looking up different things, and we spend our time laughing at the stories that come out. We can invest some of that same time in our young people. It only takes a few minutes to sign a petition. It only takes a few minutes to read a child a story. The average story it takes to read a child may be 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. Children have lunch at their school. It takes maybe 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, the lunchtime they have, giving up a little bit of that time and making the investment. One thing I think Lexington is really, and when I say Lexington, I'm speaking of you, the interviewer. I thank you for allowing me this opportunity. I think one of the greatest changes that has happened since Martin Luther King's time is not necessarily a change in children, but the change in adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's adults who have changed. Adults are now positioned to take back the power of being an adult, being a parent. When you see a young person who is speaking out incorrectly, using a language that may not be the best. In Dr. King's day, someone would say, watch your mouth. Now we walk away and go, oh, those kids just talk terribly and did it in front of me. I'm an adult.
We're talking to Naida Wington, who works with WhistleWork and Urban League and the Parents Leadership Academy. Am I missing anything there, Naida? You've got full plate right now, it sounds like. Is that the full slate?
Yes, that's great.
Okay. And the website that you brought up earlier, the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights, for more information, you can visit that at kchr.ky.gov. I wanted to ask you, because you know, you're talking about adults and part of the imperative of the Parents Leader Academy is the changing of curriculum, which you brought up. What sort of curriculum would you want to change so that we can have more philosophy-based messages than purely memorizing the dates relevant to Dr. Martin Luther King?
I would say for parents to try to get involved with their PTA, and for parents to become advocates at their school. And one of the greatest ways of becoming an advocate at school is becoming a part of the school-based decision-making council. That school-based decision-making council is the core within the school, who looks at the type of curriculum that the students will use. I would also ask for the parents to support our current superintendent and our Board of Education. Come out to their meetings. You will see information that comes up there. You have the opportunity and the right to speak. Support what is being done. And if you disagree with it being what is being done, show your support by actively voicing that disagreement. And when you voice that disagreement, come with content for suggestions.
I think that's something that we all forget, regardless of what situation we're in, is that we do have a voice and that we can we can argue it as long as it's done well and as long as it's done respectfully. And that's
absolutely
something that you have an opportunity to do, and you can really make a change that if you don't attend, it might not be able to be made, and we can't really work for the greater good.
I absolutely agree. And I would also make that same suggestion that we go down to our city council meetings. Our city council persons, our mayor, our council members at large, our council members, they represent our vote. This year we will be voting again. The next election comes up this May. We'll be voting for our city council persons. We'll be voting for individuals who will represent us on the school board. And those are very important situations. They are very important policymakers. Have your voice be heard. Dr. King and his colleagues and many individuals in this community, I would have to bring attention to the Congress on Racial Equality. That group who was started originally at a Shiloh Baptist Church, and then leadership was carried on. The torch was carried to Historic Pleasant Green Missionary Baptist Church under the leadership of Reverend Jones. That group did sit-ins. That group who had Mr. Calvert McCann, whose photography is archived at the University of Kentucky, that group led the peaceful movement here in Lexington to integrate the movies, to integrate the restaurants. And so we want to celebrate this rich history Kentucky has. Our young people and our community have a history to be proud of, and we have a legacy to continue. And I am optimistic that Lexington, we will be seeing articles that you write on the issues of justice nationally. I will look for articles and conversations that you are having on nationwide radio stations. I've got to believe that you will do that, and I'm excited to talk to you now.
Thank you.
Hi, Naida. This is Ben. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about whistle work. I guess, first of all, do you guys have a website, Facebook page, Twitter handle, all that stuff?
We do have a Facebook page, and all that stuff that you mentioned, I need to take more minutes to develop it as opposed to being out just talking. I will have to applaud and commend and thank Lisa Higgins-Hord. She supported Whistle Works signature event, our first debut, a pilot. We did Aiming for New Heights and Celebrating the Core, Congress of Racial Equality, and Kentucky Civil Rights Movement. And it was the first time that I had the privilege of doing a civil rights program here in Lexington, and that's also my understanding, it was the first time that CORE was recognized. We brought in wax figures from the National Great Blacks in Wax Museum, and we had individuals from the community and several other organizations to partner with us on that event. So we do an annual Aiming for New Heights event each year. Last year we did sports. This year we'll do an event in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of the Public Accommodations Bill, the Kentucky Civil Rights Act. We also have a Once Upon a Time on Georgetown Street camp that was held, and we do an annual light show. The light show is held to show our young people the different activities that empower and involve young people years ago, to kind of set a light on a hill for how they can be proud of where they come from, where their neighborhoods are. This year we will be doing a major project called Kentucky Reads, and I'm hopeful that I'll be able to come back at a later date and tell you more about that. As we look at Kentucky, we celebrate that the University of Kentucky basketball team, the Wildcats, are the best in the nation. We will always believe they're number one, Big Blue Nation, right? And that's great. None of us are proud of, and I love that. But as much as we celebrate our coming out for sports, we are also to be the leaders academically, and I know that you all will join me in that quest. It's important for our young people to see that we'll take the time to read with them. We'll take the time to help them improve academically. It's important for our young people when they graduate from Fayette County Public Schools for them to graduate college and career ready, for them to graduate ready to be able to move forward in their career. Many young people are dismayed when they go to college and they find that they have to take remediation classes. So we want to We want to change that dynamic. College is expensive. We want them to get credit hours for everything that they take. And so I thank Lisa Higgins Horde, and I thank others, Dr. Mock, who is no longer there. I thank Lisa A. Brown, who's with you. They have all supported the activities that WhistleWork has done and will continue to do. And I thank UK for their presence.
And Naida, are you? I take it you're from Lexington originally?
I am originally from Lexington. Hey. I'm a graduate of Bryan Station High School.
Oh, wow. And did you go to the University of Kentucky?
I did not. I actually graduated and went to an historically black college and university. I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
For an undergraduate.
And then, what did you major in?
I majored in English, and I had a double minor in the arts and in political science. And then I went on to graduate school at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, where my focus was resilient strategies and using that in conjunction with technology. And my particular emphasis in technology was the media.
Tell me more about resilient strategy. What's entailed in that?
We know that our young people have their own way of doing things. And I think that all children are resilient. One of our opportunities is to show them some strategies that will allow them to move forward in the direction we want them to go. So some young people's, think loosely here. Some young people's resilience strategy when they're in a classroom and they find out that they're not able to grasp information may be for them to become angry and to create a behavior that allows them to be kicked out of the class. The body has a natural reaction to stress. It releases cortisol. Young people in their culture have decided it's better to be, quote, bad, quote, to get in trouble than to be, quote, dumb. So instead of staying
maybe
in the classroom.
Kind of a you can't fire me because I quit kind of situation.
Exactly. The same thing. The same thing. So what they'll do is they'll create a behavior that allows them to be kicked out of class.
Right.
That is a resilient strategy. That child has saved his or her self-respect in terms of their peers. They have gotten out from under the pressure. Teaching them a different resilient strategy would be to help them learn how to breathe, learn how to calm down, learn how to ask the teacher for assistance, to learn how to reach out to a peer. Research shows that our peers are better tutors than anyone else.
Oh, really?
So children will learn better from one another because they know how to break it down to each other. So it's really important for classrooms to model as often as is possible peer learning, peer teaching. The most exciting classroom is when a teacher can be teaching and the children don't really realize that he or she is teaching, that there's a facilitation process. And we have dynamic teachers in our school system, and I'm optimistic that we'll be pulling in more, and that when we pull in more, there'll be teachers of color and different ages, different economic backgrounds, so that we'll have culturally relative classrooms as well. But when our young people are fighting one another, so one strategy that children are using now is the bullying, when they send somebody a mean message, and that's their way of retaliating. We've got to help that child who goes to retaliate to find a way to reconcile, to find a way to deal with the disappointment, find a way to handle the rejection. All that is part of being resilient. When we look at our leaders who are involved in different activities, we know that the public accommodations bill went to the Senate floor first in 1964. It wasn't passed until 1966. It took resilient strategies on behalf of the individuals involved in that to keep moving forward. They couldn't give up. They had to know how to be resilient and bounce back and know that there's tomorrow. Go for tomorrow. And we've got to teach our children how to do that. And that was one of the things I studied. And I use that when I'm tutoring young people now.
Yeah, that reminds me of something a friend reminded me of recently, which was you try, you fail, you'll fail again, fail better. Until eventually you fail a little bit better and better, and before you know you're good at something.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, what brought you back to Lexington? Was it anything in particular? Because it sounds like you were doing some very interesting work in some very exciting places. What ultimately brought you back to Kentucky?
My family is here.
Oh,
my family is here. My mother is here. My My brother and his children are here. And it was a time that we all need a place of renewal. And so it was a time to come back and to be renewed and to also realize that I had so many people pour into me when I grew up here. And it was an opportunity for me now to pour back into others. So this has been a time to do a return on investment.
And I hear you have, do you have a puppy dog?
I do, and I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm enjoying it.
You spoke a little bit about that need to for unity, and that one of our strategies is bullying. So how can we as a community change the way our young people talk to each other? Because I think a lot of people think, oh, it's not happening in my community. And depending on where you are, you may not recognize it. So what is something that changes that and helps people realize it happens in their community?
The first thing we can do is take that blinder off, that assumption that it's not happening in your community. It's happening in your community. It's probably happening in your home. And that's just being real. The second thing we can do is to look at ourselves, as Michael Jackson used to sing in his song, look at the man in the mirror. Our children duplicate our behavior. So when we say mean things about who other people are, when we talk meanly and respond meanly in our political ads, when someone cuts us off in the turning lane, and we use a finger that the peace finger minus one. Our children watch those type of things. You know, they see those type of things. So, what bullying behavior are we using when we do those things and don't acknowledge the mistake? And we all make mistakes, but part of being resilient is acknowledging the mistake and helping ourselves identify what another option would be. So one thing I would ask each person to do is, it's a simple task. Name one thing that you know makes you angry. Name that one person you see that they say something and you know that it's going to set you off. Identify that, what that is, who that is, and give yourself a plan on to handle that differently. What can you say differently? How can you act differently? We can't change someone else, but we can change ourselves.
I'm curious.
How can we respond to them?
You know, what dreams do you hear from kids these days, and do they see those dreams as something that's achievable, or are there obstacles in their way that they feel are insurmountable?
At the event that we had last night at Zion Baptist Church for the MLK observation, I had the distinct pleasure and joy of inviting every young person that was under the age of 12 to come with me up front and to take the mic. And I asked each one of them to say what they wanted to be when they grew up. There were many in the audience that said they wanted to be doctors. There were two or three that said they wanted to be artists. There was one who said they just wanted to help change the world. And then we had a couple that said they wanted to be basketball players. And then when their basketball careers were over, they would use that money to help their community. One young man said he would use that to feed the homeless. Another young man said he just wanted to live a long life. So,
and they all see those things as accomplishable, that's within their grasp, and they're very positive towards it? Or did you sense any kind of negativity?
I didn't sense negativity, but I will say I was just with them for a brief second. I did sense it a few. It took them a while to put their arm and their mouth around what they would say they wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage all of us to ask our children in our midst every day, what is it you want to be? What do you want to do? And if they don't know the title for their job, help them identify what they think their good skills are. One young lady said, I don't know what I want to be. And I said, well, what do you do well? And she said, I draw really well. I said, well, I can't wait for you to be an artist. Let's help give them some options. One program, the BMW program, the Carter G. Woodson School, they do is that they encourage young people to dream, and they help identify career choices. As we look at career aspirations, there's so many more careers that are available to young people today than what was available during Dr. King's childhood or during my childhood. Let's take advantage of introducing them to those careers. There is the organization National Black engineer an organization, I would ask people to look into that group. There's Project C. They come out and they tell you about science, technology, engineering, arts, and math programs. Let's make sure that we give young people vocabulary for their skill set. If you have a child who argues well and who just won't let a debate go, introduce them to the field of legal work. If you have a young person who seems like they rescue every pet and dog, talk to them about being a veterinarian. Let's give them the vocabulary for their skill set.
That's awesome. Well, to wrap up here, what's one final thing you want to leave us with? One last note to end this conversation on?
That the future is bright, our young people are talented, our young people are gifted, and our young people need us to help them utilize those talents and gifts. Let's be adults.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. So this is 95.7 WLXL. You're here with Lexington, Kyle Bigelow, and Ben Wolf. Thank you, Miss Nyetta.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.